shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you are tuning in to Therapy in a Nutshell here on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. Today in the studio, I have a special guest who's 6 feet apart, and his name is Dr. Richard Malachi. He's been my special guest before, and he's sitting across the room from me. So,
good morning.
We are social distanced. So, is everything all right? My producer's saying something's wrong with our mics. We're good?
Good morning, Dr. Patty.
Oh, no. You don't have your mic on or something. Jared's fixing
it. I was trying to say to switch mics.
Oh, switch mics.
Yeah.
Oh, go to the other mic. Okay. We're not used to doing it from this angle. Okay. So Dr. Richard Malachi is here in the studio, and we're going to be talking about something that I'm getting extremely worried about, actually. Over the last week or two, I have been watching people begin to go under. And so this show is called Barely Hanging On. There are people that I never, ever would have thought would get suicidal that are feeling like they're at the end of the rope and they can't hang on. There's people that are going into despair and hopelessness, and the anxiety is off the charts. And so Dr. Malachi and I were talking about what he's seen in his medical office, and I'm seeing it my clients I've been doing telehealth with, and therapist friends are all talking about the same thing. We are worried that this quarantine and seclusion is beginning to take a toll on people that they aren't dealing well with anymore. And so one of the other things I see is that this on again, off again, the quarantine's ending. No, it's not. We're going to be able to go out more. We're going to be able to go to a restaurant. No, we're not. You're going to go back to work. Is there any work there for you to go back to? People are stressed to the max. And I wanted to do this show because when I start talking to this with people, I hear often, oh, I thought I was the only one. I thought I was some kind of weak person or some kind of weenie that couldn't handle the pressure. So I wanted to do this show because you're not alone. There are a lot of people going under. Dr. Malachi, what are you seeing in your office in this regard?
Well, so I'm used to, I talk about stress pretty much every day because most family doctors do. But, you know, I 2.5 months ago, I just had a wheelbarrow full of Xanax brought in the office, and you know, I'm handing that stuff out like candy because people are, I would share your same observation. I mean, people that normally are fine or that normally I wouldn't suspect would be having any issues, some of them are literally shaking in my office. Like I had a 31-year-old woman with two little kids in a couple weeks ago and two masks on, gloves on, hands shaking. I'm going to die of this coronavirus. My kids are going to be left without a mother. And it's, and she's fit and she's healthy and it's just awful.
It's frightening to watch what people are going through, and there's nothing you can do for them. And this is what's really weird too. You can't even give them a hug.
No, which is one of my standard treatments.
I know. Yes. I almost always hug my clients. That people just need to know that they're cared about. But the things I'm hearing are loneliness, financial stress. People are really stressed about politics. And either side, they're just beside themselves with angst and anger about politics. They're fearful for their job futures. And if it isn't even their job future, it's the fallout. For example, if you're a therapist in private practice and a whole lot of people go under financially, your client base falls away because they can't afford to make their house payment, let alone pay their co-pays on therapy or go to therapy out of pocket. So there's a domino effect that happens when the economy begins to crumble. The other big thing I'm hearing is huge relationship issues. being quarantined with your significant other can be a blessing and a curse. And sometimes it's a blessing for the first week or so, and after that, every little thing they're doing bothers you. I saw the cutest video on Facebook the other day where a woman was saying, I've been married to him for 31 years, and he asked me where the spoons are. 31 years, and he doesn't know where the spoons are. And she was livid. I thought, yeah, there it is. You know, it wouldn't bother her if she didn't have to hang out with him 24/7.
Yeah, I'm seeing the same thing.
Yeah, and so the reason I wanted to do this show is even if you walk away from this and get it that you're not the only one who's barely hanging on, it's a lot of people. And so we're going to talk about some of the things that make you barely hanging on. If you want to call into the show and tell us, give us a little brief version of what you're struggling with, we'd be happy to have you share that. You don't have to use your real name or where you're from. The phone number for the show is 530-605-4567. 605-4567. My producer, Jared, will answer the phone, and then he'll let me know that you're on the line. So the things that I see people getting really, really upset about and having a hard time with is they're beginning to do things they don't usually do. Some people are crying and depressed. Some people are starting to sleep all day. Some people are drinking during the day. And in the beginning, they might have done that because they were doing the vacay thing. I'm on vacation, and I can get up and have a beer with lunch and not worry about getting sleepy in the afternoon. But if that has taken on a life of its own, and you're finding yourself drinking more and more, drinking earlier in the day, not giving a rip if you get drunk and hungover because where are you going anyway, that's one issue that some people are beginning to do. Eating differently, eating too much. I have not talked to one person yet who is not eating. Have you?
No. In fact, my COVID-19 is right below my belly button. It's awful.
He calls it his COVID-19. That's cute. But I have not, I have not heard one person say to me, I haven't been able to eat. Now, the only exception to that is some people that I deal with who are in profound grief. Because profound grief is difficult enough to deal with when you can see family or people can come see you or bring you food or go to church or anything that you do normally. People in profound grief are really, really, really struggling during this. So the other thing I see is people are often eating a lot, and they're getting a lot of indigestion. Are you seeing any medical issues from eating differently?
Well, for the GI, so our GI tract, in fact, specifically stomach acid, is probably in humans is the most common physical manifestation of stress. So my normal year, I'll get about one bleeding ulcer. I've had two bleeding ulcers in the last 6 weeks in my practice where people are throwing up blood and, you know, they have to go to the hospital and get scoped. And so double the normal acid blocker prescriptions in my office.
So the acid reflux, the already touchy gut that they might have had, they've added more alcohol. Oh. They're eating what they want when they want all day long.
And they don't unplug that television set. So each day is more, oh, my God, look what happened to that poor person, or look what happened to that poor person, or look at this tragedy. And, you know, it's like a slowly evolving train wreck, and you get to see all the blood.
Yeah. The news is stressful and overwhelming to people. Just sitting on the couch constantly, they're not really helping themselves. Binge-watching Netflix might be helping you get through something, but it isn't necessarily good for your stomach acid and things like that. So the other thing I see that's definitely slipping, and people joke about this, is their hygiene. I mean, people say, I haven't washed my hair in a week. I actually stepped it up today. I changed my T-shirt. I kept the same sweatpants. If you're changing your underwear, we're probably okay with that. But their hygiene has gone down the tubes. People are getting stressed about, I had a friend who was just beside herself, that she's got like 2 inches of gray-white roots showing. And she said, I haven't seen this on my head in years, and it's depressing. I not only feel COVID fat, but I feel old and ugly when I look at my hair. So I said, wear a hat. But
yeah, people don't want to come to my office because they think the COVID-19 is there. But the other reason they don't want to come is they haven't had a haircut or nails done in
Everybody feels they look gross. I know. All right, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, I want to talk about the different stresses. Dr. Malachi is going to talk about how he sees those stress manifest physically. If you want to call in, 530-605-4567. This is Dr. Patty. We'll be back in a minute.
Working from home? Conference calls?
You're still on mute, John.
With everything we have going on right now, it's never been more important to get the sleep we need. Quality Sleep is a natural immune booster, and only the Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your movements and automatically adjusts your comfort and support on both sides, your Sleep Number setting. So all those other things we're doing to stay healthy and happy, well, they'll work better too. And now, during our Memorial Day sale, save $1,000 on the Queen Sleep Number 360 Special Edition smart bed, now only $17.99, only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. If you're 50 or older, now is the time to schedule this life-saving test. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%, so stop making excuses and get screened. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to kcnr1460.com and click on the archives link.
Hey, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane and Shasta Tanks. Because of the probability of our power being shut off during wind events or fires, many people are installing standby generators. Shasta Gas is now selling standby generators with propane tanks so that you will have home power during these outages. Give us a call at 365-3793 to get a quote on a generator and tank installation. That number again is 365-3793.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, Dr. Patty. You're listening to the beautiful Native American flute music of Randy McGinnis. Thank you, Randy, for allowing us to use your music on this show. You can go to randymcginnis.com and check out all six of his CDs. Here in the studio with me is Dr. Malachi over across the room, way down there. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Patty.
We're social distance in the studio, and Jared, my producer, is on the other side of the glass. So we have a caller on the line. I am appreciative of you calling in. This is Suzanne. Suzanne, hi. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much for calling in and being willing to share what you're going through. What state do you live in? Where are you? East Coast, West Coast? You don't have to be specific if you don't want to.
California, North Bay area.
Oh, okay. So give us a little brief thing about what you're going through with all this stress.
Well, I live alone, mm-hmm. and I am actually working on site. I consider it essential in a non-essential business.
Mm-hmm.
So I do go to work every day, but there's pretty much no one there anymore, just myself. So, you know, there's a lot of echoing going on, literally and figuratively in my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're all struggling with the notion of spending way too much time thinking.
Yes. Busy brain syndrome is hard when you have too much time.
Indeed, and I'm an overthinker anyway. So.
Mm-hmm. I can relate to that. So being alone, has that made it harder for you? It sounds like you're going into the quote-unquote office, whatever your non-essential business is, and you're alone down there, and then you're going home and you're alone,
mm-hmm.
And you're rattling around in your head. Do you feel like our topic today of barely hanging on, kind of feeling like you're going under, is that something you've been struggling with?
Immensely. You know, I went into this shelter in place, a person who already is prone to anxiety
mm-hmm.
for various reasons. And so I knew from the top that this was going to be difficult for me.
Yes.
And, you know, so what I'm finding is that I have to work every day, sometimes it feels like every minute, I have to work what I call my tool chest.
Good.
Of, you know, ways to help manage this. You know, I have been, I drive home sometimes and just burst into tears for no real apparent reason.
Yes.
I'm not sleeping well. I was kind of overeating for a while, and then about 10 days ago, it is now a chore to, make myself eat. So there is a kind of that grief thing going on that you were talking about.
Yes. And you're also talking about you're sliding down into depression some.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I just teeter back and forth between, you know, deep, dark, morosely depressed and then hyper anxious.
Right. And they go hand in hand.
They do. You know, some days it's hard to figure out which name to give it.
Yes. Well, Dr. Malachi and I share a lot of patients, and we both call it kind of depression anxiety because they go hand in hand, like hands in gloves. So,
indeed they do.
Do you have a resource for that? Do you have a medical doctor? Do you? Dr. Malachi is talking about some medical doctors doing telemed, but this is the type of thing you could talk on telemed about. Do you have some kind of help with that if you start to slip too far down is what I'm worried about.
I do. I have a therapist that I was seeing when I lived in a different area a year ago, and he has agreed to take me back on telephonically since that's kind of how he's doing all of his business these days, kind of like the rest of you.
Right.
So there's that. And then when I got diagnosed about 5 years ago with PTSD, my personal track is, I find the process of trying to find the right medications to be overwhelming to me.
Yes.
I, you know, I have such sensitivities to, you know, the various drugs. And so, I just work really hard to do all the things that help, you know, make sure I'm getting sunshine, make sure I'm eating well, make sure I'm exercising, you know, try to sleep, dial back the alcohol, you know, all the things.
Right.
And you know, and I do pretty well with that. Sometimes it feels like a lot of work, but, you know, you plow for a while and then all of a sudden you look up and realize, oh, I made it through.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, Suzanne, you're the perfect person to call in because you're somebody who manages depression and anxiety on a regular basis in her life. And it sounds like you do a beautiful job with lots of tools and you work hard at it. And I love that. If you were one of my clients, I'd be like, yeah, I like working with this person.
Yeah.
Dr. Malachi said they're shaking his head. Yes. Somebody who works at it and does their stuff. And you are the exact type of person that I've been beginning to worry about, because if you were one of my clients, I'd say, here's Suzanne. She's hardworking. She's strong. She works her program. She deals with her depression and anxiety, and she's barely hanging on now because this is getting to be too much.
Indeed. And, you know, one of my really big kind of front-facing issues right now is that I work in a non-essential business. And, you know, what we know from science and epidemiology is that we've just hit the first wave of this, you know, in all likelihood, and that, you know, things are going to get much, much worse before they get better. And so, you know,
Susan, that's something that you're hearing on television every day, but there's quite a few arguments about whether that is true or not. We're in uncharted territory with this particular coronavirus, but I've been 35 years in private practice. This is my third coronavirus epidemic, and you know, they didn't shut down the country for the other two. They didn't shut down the country during Woodstock when 100,000 Americans died from Hong Kong flu. That was another.
Did you see second waves in those?
No.
So people had it, and then they'd.
Yeah.
It'd be like kind of like the flu. We'd have to watch next year when.
Well, but it's not. But it's not like the flu. So influenza, viruses mutate, and the coronavirus is capable of mutating as well. And each year the CDC tries to keep us ahead of the game with influenza by checking out the influenza viruses that are active in the southern hemisphere during their winter and trying to get the northern hemisphere ready for our winter. So, and they take their best guess, and sometimes the flu vaccine works and sometimes it doesn't. But no one's ever made a coronavirus vaccine. Nobody. Nobody yet. And they're talking, but no one's ever made one yet. Coronavirus in humans causes a common cold.
And it, yeah, they've never had a vaccine.
How long has HIV been around? Since I started my residency in 1982. We don't have an HIV vaccine, do we? No. So I sure hope they get one, but...
Wouldn't we have had one for the common cold by now, then?
You'd think.
Well, see, and that's one of the things. I'm not particularly the sky is falling sort of person. But when I hear them rushing through a coronavirus vaccine, when for 50 years they have never found a coronavirus vaccine, they're going to rush one through and start making people take it before it's even fully tested, that makes me kind of worry. And I'm not even like one of these super people going, no, you're going to over my dead body sort
well,
of thing.
And I'm not an anti-vaxxer.
No, you're not.
No, but I think, you know, vaccines have saved millions and millions of human beings in our fragile little world. But so the idea that for sure it's going to get worse before it's going to get better, quite frankly, I think that's hogwash. And
okay, good.
Yeah, I started med school 42 years ago, so... I'm old.
So one of the other things that I've been struggling with is, and I finally have gotten a little bit of relief from this, is that, so we started sheltering in place in my area on March 17th, so St. Patrick's Day. The first couple of weeks, I started doing all the reading and the listening, just like we all have. And the more I heard, the more I began to suspect that I actually had the virus.
Had it before?
Yeah, and I was very anxious about that. And it took quite a while before there were antibody tests available in my area. And I finally got that done a couple weeks ago, and just got the results back this last Monday that I'm positive for the antibody.
So, are you aware? Did they test you for IgG?
What's
IgG?
Well, okay. So there's our body, our immune system, white cells make them. There are different antibodies. When you have the acute infection, you get IgA spike, so they'd find that in your blood. IgA, immunoglobulin A, sort of patrols the mucous membranes, which all respiratory virus enter through your mucous membranes, eyes, nose, mouth. So then IgM is when you're actively fighting it, you know, 5 to 7 days into the infection, and IgG confers your future immunity. So and it depends. They might have tested all three of them on you. But if you have one that's positive, what I want to know is which one of those letters, if it's IgA, you're sick right now. If it's IgM, you're fighting it right now. And if it's IgG, you're immune to it for the future.
Why don't people tell us
well,
these things?
I will
things?
Go back and look. I'm gonna suggest that I'm a G though, because
that's the likely thing.
I was very very ill from Christmas night until mid January. I'm in my early 50s, and I've literally never been that sick in my entire life.
So that would be good news.
Oh, it's great news.
Because you're immune.
Yeah, you can't give it to someone, and you can't get it from
someone.
The joke
now is I'm wearing the immunity idol.
Now we get the scarlet eye on our chest that says we're immune.
Yeah, that just means you should take a six-pack out in the street and start partying.
My producer's signaling me that we have to go to break. Suzanne, I deeply appreciate you being willing to share your story. You have no idea how many people you have helped. And I want to refer you to my podcast. If you go to Dr. Patricia Bay, Therapy in a Nutshell. Awesome. Because
I am a listener.
Anxiety and PTSD and depression, those will all give you, you'll put more tools in your tool belt. And it sounds like you already have a pretty good tool belt. Thank you so much, Suzanne. And if you were right here with me, I would give you a COVID hug.
Thank you. Elbow to elbow.
Elbow, kick your little feet.
Both as well.
Take care. Bye-bye. We're going to break. We'll be back.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty, and we're going to talk some more about barely hanging on in this whole quarantine, COVID-19 difficulty. Thank you once again, Suzanne, for calling in. You were awesome. I think you helped a ton of people, and that was brave of you. I deeply appreciate it. So the main areas of stress that I'm seeing for people are jobs and money. That's huge. I mean, getting a stimulus check, okay, that's great. That helps some, but... You know, when, like for me, my income's cut in half because a lot of people don't want to do telehealth. So, you know, it's just different and a different financial thing. And I'm not crying poor because I'm doing okay, but there are people that were living paycheck to paycheck that when their income is gone or cut in half or whatever, it's really messing them up. So money and job stress, whether you have a job to go back to, relationship stress, family stress. We see all the jokes on Facebook about moms who are doing homeschool with their kids. But it's really stressful, and it is stressing them out. I mean, they make funny jokes about, like, can I start drinking at 10 in the morning because I'm teaching my kids? But some of them... I mean, it's fighting going on with the kids. And so there's stresses that are happening right and left. And the whole purpose of this show is for you to know you're not the only one who feels like you're barely hanging on. One reason we really need to get our country to open back up is because they're expecting 75,000 more deaths of despair. And that's just a conservative number, actually. It could be way bigger than that. Deaths of despair are things like suicide because of depression and anxiety that bombards out of control. Someone that was already managing it, like Suzanne said. So depression and anxiety that leads to suicide ideology. Drugs and alcohol, the inadvertent kind of death that happens when you are depressed and upset and you're using drugs and you drink some alcohol and you die. It looks like a suicide sometimes, and sometimes it's an accidental death. So there's a whole lot of stuff that are bringing people down. Politics, news is making people fearful, feel chaotic, confused as all get out. This whole, yes, we're open, no, we're not, we'll open next week, maybe not. Yes, you can, but now you're going to be punished. But, I mean, it's making people very upset. So I want to utilize Dr. Malachi here today because the biggest issue I see by far is people are medically fearful.
Yeah, they're terrified. So...
Can you speak to that? Like, I think what you were telling Suzanne about that whole IG thing.
Immunoglobulins, yeah.
It's fascinating, and no one's ever said that.
Yeah. Well, so. It's you know, the body is a it's a wonderful, beautiful thing, and your body is a better doctor than me or any other doctor you've ever met. So the thing I've been mentioning to some of my anxious people, which sounds awful, but I take any shot I can. I just tell the people that are real fearful and smoke, or the people that are real fearful and are 40 pounds overweight or don't control their diabetes, I say, hey, this is your chance. This is your wake-up call. Why don't you improve your immune system? Because if you improve your immune system, it turns out this coronavirus is probably going to be similar once we have all the data, which we don't now. It turns out this coronavirus will probably be quite similar to the past coronaviruses. And just a really quick tutorial about the medical end. So what kills you when you end up in the ICU with coronavirus? What kills you is your own immune system. And people go, what are you talking about? So the virus doesn't kill you. What happens is your immune system overreacts to the virus, and it produces a little Latin word called a cytokine storm. So the cytokine storm releases a lot of things that our immune system uses to protect us normally. Analogy I've been using is if you get stung by a big old bee and the back of your arm swells up and gets big and red and swollen and itchy and hurts, well, in 1 in 1,000 people, that's what happens inside those patients' lung. And their little tiny microscopic air sacs fill with fluid, and the physiology of their problem is drowning.
In their own lungs.
Yeah, the patient drowns. So it's like they're in a bathtub underwater with their mouth open, and you're trying to ventilate them with a ventilator, and it ain't working. Mm-hmm. So in New York, I think the death rate is over 80% on a ventilator once you get on a ventilator. So, and there's a lot of chemistry issues. There's a really cool device that's not available everywhere, but there's a filter now that can be put in a dialysis setup that will filter all those nasty little things out of the patient's blood. It's a cytokine filter. And the FDA gave the company that makes it emergency approval middle March, just about, you know, when all the, you know, quarantining got started. And so that's been helping some people in my day, which goes back before there was electricity.
We used to do
exchange transfusions. There are other medical models for where your immune system gets a little crazy and decides to try to kill you. And in fact, when they're, you know, got these poor little kids on the front page that are getting, you know, this immune vasculitis, autoimmune vasculitis, and, you know, getting pretty sick from that. So we know what to do about those things, and we need to learn more about this virus so we can more adequately treat the people that get it. But, you know, it looks like at least 50%, probably a little more, of the patients who are exposed to the virus never know they had it.
Yeah, and those immune tests going to tell whether you have the immunity,
yes,
or not. Like, and Suzanne has the immunity. Congratulations, Suzanne.
Yeah, she can't give it to anyone, and she can't get it from anyone.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that's, you know, when you read about the herd immunity story, what some countries like Sweden have tried to do is generate herd immunity by letting everyone get it. Mm-hmm. Or everyone getting a little taste and being aggressive, treating the ones that get real sick. But if there was an easy way to do it, it had already been done. So
yeah, and I don't think there's anybody to blame for how this is being treated or not being treated. Or it's everybody's doing the best they can. I see that across the board. And making decisions with limited information sometimes.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So it's good to know that this treatment you're talking about that can filter that stuff out of your blood is something they may put more time and energy into. Like, rather than order 40,000 ventilators, maybe you need 40,000 of those.
Well, the ventilator is the knee-jerk reaction when someone comes in with a real low partial pressure of oxygen. They're called the PO2.
Yeah.
Normal PO2 is over 90% in all healthy, normal people. But, you know, there's a curious thing they've been noticing in the major urban areas. They call it happy hypoxic. And hypoxia means low oxygen. And the patients come in talking, conversational, and their PO2 is 70.
Really?
And normally when a PO2 is 70, we're, you know, intubating you and sending you straight to the unit, and you're dying.
So people can actually be functioning with low O2 levels?
And all kinds of theories about why that seems to be true. and I'm not going to talk about the ones I've read about, quite a few of them, but there's no point in talking about them because no one has proven any of them to be true. But
wow.
Yeah.
But the whole idea with COVID when they come in is they want to check your O2 levels. They want to see if you're going into that catastrophic kind
right.
of failure
if,
from your immune system.
If we catch that early, again, what we would do 40 years ago in the ER, if we caught it early, realized it's a viral pneumonia and a cytokine storm, actually, we just gave them all huge doses of steroids. And most of the time, it saved them. Steroids, you know, dampen the immune response sort of like a wet blanket. Now, since in the last 15 years, we've had a lot of immune modulators, but things we use for people who have autoimmune illnesses like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis. Well, the Plaquenil, that we call it, the trade name is Plaquenil, but the hydroxychloroquine, it's a pretty good treatment for lupus. And you know, over the years, I've prescribed it a few times, and there's a bunch of interesting theories why that may prevent people from getting such a low oxygen.
Okay, so it's those are all the things that we hear so many conflicting things. We hear conflicting advice, conflicting something worked, something didn't. Of course, everybody wants to blame the president for everything, but, you know, this is all so confusing. And the issue that I'm seeing is people don't know who to believe or what to believe. They're given frightening information that's then debunked by the other side, that's then told it's somebody's fault. And so you end up walking away going, I just want to shut everybody up and get this over with. And what that does is raise your anxiety inside.
Right.
So I see people tensing up with, I don't know what to believe. Wear a mask, don't wear a mask. Go out, don't go out. Take this, don't take that. I'm going to die, you know. And it's scary.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. And one of the medical things that's a bother for us is people will delay getting evaluated for something that's important because they're afraid to come in the waiting room, you know, because they think, you know, that's where the virus lives. They think that's where, in the ER, they think that's where the virus lives because, you know, that's where the sick people go. And it makes a certain amount of sense. Although at most, like for me, at my office, we've been seeing patients through the whole thing. And if somebody's sick, I put all my stuff on and I go out in the parking lot and get in their truck.
Have you seen anyone with COVID?
No, I've done about 40 tests total, either the 4-inch thing down your nose or now we have the serologic test for the last 2 weeks, the blood test. And you don't want to do a serologic test. That's a finger prick. It's not accurate. Don't do it. Some people are, you know, to be honest, they're profiting from doing that finger prick, and it's not, there's a lot of false negatives and false positives. The accurate one is done, well, Abbott Labs is the one that did mine. I had mine checked just because, you know, I want to be able to tell patients, hey, I've either had it or I haven't had it. And the Abbott test, they have to take a blood out of your vein, just like when you're, you know, giving blood for a blood test.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the issue that we're talking about today is that these medical fears, the anxiety and the depression, the this is going on too long, anxiety. When is it going to end, fears and anxiety? What is this doing to my job? Is it going to be there? And if it's not going to harm your job because you're in an essential business, is it going to harm other jobs in kind of a domino effect or collaterally that are going to affect your
essential
business?
Yeah, or even
how
am I going to make my mortgage payment? How is my boss going to make his mortgage payment?
Yeah, how am I going to make my car payment?
All those things.
Yeah. If you're a landlord and somebody can't pay their rent, you still have the mortgage on the place that you own. It isn't like you get forgiven.
It's a domino effect.
It's a huge domino effect. And so the anxiety that is being created across the board is very, very difficult for people. So the issue is, many people are barely hanging on. And what we want you to do is tie a knot in the end of your rope and keep hanging on. So we're going to go to break. We're going to come back, and we want to kind of sum up some coping skills and talk about some things you can do if you feel like you're beginning to go under. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans' issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5, 1460 AM.
In these uncertain times, do you need a much-needed break from cooking? If so, let Mary's Pizza Shack take care of you with their to-go delivery, curbside pickup. Mary's is offering to-go beer and wine at a special discounted rate. And as always, they have their famous pizza, pasta, soups, and salads. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m., and Friday and Saturday from 11 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. From Mary's family to yours, please be safe.
If you're looking for the accountability of a personal trainer, the energy and camaraderie of a group, and a budget-conscious price tag, then our team training at Adamson's Peak Performance is for you. We've got your fitness needs covered with five types of time-efficient, 30-minute team training workouts. Mix and combine these challenging strength and conditioning sessions to enhance sports performance, build muscle, burn fat, and sculpt the body you've been dreaming of. AdamsonsPeakPerformance.com or call us at 221-8006.
I expected it to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to MakeTheConnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you are tuning in to us talking about barely hanging on. Here in the studio with me is Dr. Richard Malachy, and we are talking about how the COVID fears and anxiety are hurting people in terms of their anxiety and their depression. And Dr. Malachy is bringing his medical expertise as a family physician for almost 40 years, who has been through many of these crises, these medical crises of Hong Kong flu and all the different COVID stuff.
Oh, I was 12 for the Hong Kong flu.
Yeah, I had Hong Kong flu when I was about 13, and I was extremely ill for three weeks.
Yeah, it hurt a lot of people.
It was very difficult. But what we want to do is we've been talking about the medical fears and how stressful this is, especially for people suffering from anxiety and depression, that we're managing it anyway. And the thing that made me want to do this show today is that I am watching very strong people who I never would have thought would be suicidal, who I didn't think would start to be crumbling from anxiety and depression, who wouldn't be calling me saying, I think I'm losing it. And they're people that are dealing with other normal life issues, but they aren't people that I would think would go under. And so when it's starting to affect the really strong people, it makes me super worried about people that are struggling, who were struggling anyway when they went into this. So Dr. Malachy and I want to talk to you about some of the coping skills that you can have. And one of the first things I want to tell you is if you are suicidal, don't fear that people are going to think you're weak or anything like that. You can call a suicide hotline. They will spend time on the phone with you. They said their calls are up 900% since this quarantining stuff. Suicide ideology, which is thinking about suicide, but you feel like you wouldn't really do it, but you start thinking, what if, and you kind of plan it in your head a little bit, and then you back off and say, I'd never do that. That's suicide ideology is a wake-up call that you are sliding. So even if you know you're a person who would not kill yourself, okay, wonderful. But if you are having suicide ideology, it is a cry for help. You can call a therapist and get into a telehealth sort of thing. You can call your doctor. You can call your gynecologist. You can call a suicide hotline. And Dr. Malachy, tell us what you do with your patients when they call up and they're saying, I'm super depressed, I'm super anxious, whatever. What are some of the things you're doing with them?
Well, if they have a history, like I guess like you were saying, if they have a history of depression and anxiety already, and most they do go, depression and anxiety go hand in glove through the garden, then, you know, I guess I'd say I worry a little more about those folks than the real strong ones who've never looked over their shoulder before.
Right.
I try to get them hooked up with a therapist because I think they usually help people more than the meds do. I often will, you know, depending on how anxious they are or whether they have panic, there's different levels of anxiety. But
yes, it's on a spectrum, that's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, it's a lot of shades of gray. So depending on how anxious they are, I often will just send them home with a tool so that they can control their anxiety. And we have some excellent prescription tools for that, like, you know, low-dose Xanax or, you know, some of the, you know, Xanax is sort of like, I guess, grandson of Valium. But at any rate, we have medicine. Like, I'll send them home with 10 Xanax and say, I just send them home and say, look, take a half a pill. If they don't have to work that day or drive their kids around, take a half a pill on an empty stomach when you get home and see what it does.
Right.
And, you know, one thing about those medicines is they are good for anxiety. They will stop it. And often giving patients a tool where they know they can stop it is, they may not ever take another pill because they know they can't stop it if they need to.
Like people who are very afraid of flying, and they know that they have a Xanax in their pocket, one Xanax, they often never take it.
It never goes on to the panic. Yeah.
Right. Now, we're talking about people who don't necessarily have addiction issues.
Right.
So because benzodiazepine, Xanax, clonazepam.
Don't give them to alcoholics.
Okay. And yeah, don't. Alcohol and Xanax can kill you.
Yep.
That's clear. Alcohol and benzodiazepines can kill people. And that's kind of the accidental combination I was talking about in the first part of the show, that you can get this combination of drugs and alcohol going and die, and you didn't mean to kill yourself, and it looks like a suicide.
Happens every day.
Right. So benzodiazepines, which are Xanax, Dr. Malachi and I both think of them as an emergency tool. I like it how Dr. Malachi calls it a fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
He says if there's a fire going on, you want to put it out. And you want to use it sparingly. You don't walk around your house using a fire extinguisher all day long, every day.
There
has to be fire. So when my husband Richard was dying of his brain disease, frontal temporal degeneration, and he would anxiety crawling out of his skin, screaming and yelling. Actually, he couldn't control his emotions. On the side of the Xanax bottle that was in the safe, it said ER drug, which meant I only used it in emergency when I absolutely had to. So if you are having severe anxiety and you're really struggling, a call to your doctor is okay. It doesn't mean that you're weak. If he gives you a limited prescription of Xanax for you to take a quarter or a half to quell your anxiety, and then you put it in your safe and you mark it fire extinguisher emergency drug, like Dr. Malachi, you were telling me when we were talking at the break that you'll have a patient you'll give one prescription of Xanax to, and 2 years later they have 28 of the pills left.
Yeah, what it does is a lot of people with especially panic disorder, they'll describe it as a snowball rolling down the mountain.
Yeah.
And it's pretty small when it starts, but by the time it's halfway down the mountain, it's going 90 miles an hour. It's as big as a house.
Right.
And if you can do something, you know, 10 yards into rolling down the mountain to stop it from getting bigger and faster, oh my gosh, it's a wonderful tool.
Yes, and you do that one time, and you're right. The next time it happens, you go, okay, I'm just going to ride this out a little bit because I have a tool to use. So medication is an appropriate tool when prescribed by your doctor, when used sparingly and appropriately. The other thing is learning the tools for anxiety and depression. If you go to my podcast, they're free. You can listen to them. The podcast on anxiety and anticipatory anxiety will give you a bunch of things to do when you start feeling anxious. The other thing is, in this isolation, you have to be able to reach out to talk to people about how you feel. I know a whole group of people that like to stay positive and don't like to whine and don't want to say they're hurting and we're going to get through this, and they're kind of Pollyanna. And then they go and close their door and they're isolated and alone with no one to talk to about their fears. So you have to speak up. You have to talk to somebody. You've got to connect with a friend or even a helpline. If you are lonely and isolated, or you've lost your significant other in your home grieving by yourself, and I've got people that are doing that, that's just horrible for them, it's okay to call a helpline and talk to a stranger. Just talking and getting it out sometimes can ground you and make you feel a little bit better. Even when somebody can't fix it.
Oh, it helps a lot to get it out. And, I sometimes use the analogy that when you're sick, you feel really horrible before you throw up, but then you feel really good after.
Yeah.
So, you know, just throw
Spoken
that.
Like a true medical doctor.
Yeah, throw that stuff up. Get it out.
Yeah, exactly. I tell people all the time, I want them to write a therapeutic letter. And this is a tool that you guys can use. A therapeutic letter is, I call it a vomit letter. It's so funny that you say that. You're going to vomit everything you're afraid of, everything you fear, everything you're feeling, and blowing out of proportion. You're going to vomit it onto a page. And you can call it Dear God, or you can say, Dear Dr. Patty, I'm sending you my vomit letter. It's okay. You can use any kind of language. You don't have to have good grammar, said the grammar nerd, Dr. Patty. It's okay not to. Just vomit it onto the page and get it out. You'd be surprised how much better you feel. And if you don't want to share it with anybody, you don't want anybody to find it, you burn it and you give it up as a prayer.
It still helps you to write it, even if no one gets to read it.
Yeah, even if you burn it as a prayer and give it to God, it's okay. It's, you know, you've got to realize that this is an unusual situation, but it is actually what people go through all the time in this world in terms of isolation, seclusion, no support, fearfulness, not knowing who to believe or what's happening with their health or not happening with their health. It's just all been compacted into one immediate package right here, right now, and it's overwhelming. So if you feel like you are barely holding on, you're not alone. It's happening all over the place.
Yeah, my anxious people have tripled.
Yeah, mine too. Mine too. I'm getting tons of calls, and then people that say, I really need to come in for an appointment, but I don't want to do the telephone. It's hard for some people to do telephone or, you know, video chat. Video chat's not easy. You stare at yourself while you're doing it, and that's weird.
Yeah, last thing I want to do is look at myself.
Yeah. Who's that old lady sitting there in the video? So what other medical things are you seeing? We just got a couple minutes left. Is there any other thing you want to flag people to watch for? The stomach acid stuff, the ulcer stuff?
Well, yeah. So stomach physical manifestations of stress, stomach acid, people who normally sometimes have a little psoriasis will get a lot psoriasis. People who have a little asthma will get a lot of asthma. Okay. Those kind of things are aggravated or exacerbated by stress. My MS patients will have a flare. Okay. Rheumatoid arthritis, all the autoimmune people flare. Mm-hmm. And you know, when the beat goes on, I mean, I had an acute gallbladder this week. I had a kidney stone this week. I had two chest pains this week. I mean, everybody's still getting all their normal stuff.
Right.
In fact, some of the folks are probably right, too. They're just saying, hey, people are preventing or delaying their normal screening tests. Like, they're not getting their mammograms. They're not getting their prostates checked. And because the last place they want to be is in my office sitting in one of those chairs.
Right. And so normal, everyday illnesses that people deal with are being set aside and not...
Yeah, and that stuff's still going on.
Yeah, oh, it doesn't...
That doesn't stop just because of the corona.
Wouldn't it be nice if this was a way we could stop all that stuff from happening? So we just have a minute left, and I want to reach out to each and every one of you who are struggling. I just want you to know you are not alone. There are many people who are... just barely hanging on, and it's okay for you to talk to people about it, to get on your social media and say, hey, is anybody else feeling like they're barely hanging on? Please, no political rants, no COVID fear rants. Just, are you barely hanging on? Know that I get it. And you'll find 20 people answering you saying, yeah, I'm so stressed out, and I'm so tired of this, and I don't know what to do, and I'm fearful. There are people that feel they're losing their relationships because they are quarantined and sequestered away from somebody that they love. And this is hard, you guys. It's not something that you should just be breezing off and saying something's wrong with you if you're struggling. So if you are barely hanging on, reach out for help. Call your family doctor. Get in for some help, even if it's telemed. Call a therapist, see if you can get on their schedule, even for telehealth. And see if you can reach out for some help. My podcast is free, and there's like 70 titles on there, maybe 80 now, I forget. I've got over 17,000 listeners who are tuning in, and it's helping people find some help when they can't afford to go or they can't get out. So I want to thank Dr. Richard Malachi for being here and being our medical expert. I want to thank Suzanne. You are awesome to call in. I just want to thank you. So this is Dr. Patricia Bay. You've been listening to Therapy in a Nutshell, and it's about barely hanging on. Tie a knot in the end of your rope and hang on there, baby. We want to heal the world 1 hour at a time.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.